If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
What's happening, friends? This is it, the big one, Podcast Unlocked, episode 469. It is November 10th. 2020, the day you've had circled on your calendar since whenever they finally confirmed the date. But here we are, and the date that you've just been waiting for, the Xbox Series X and the Series S are out. It's the next generation has arrived. We've waited 7 years between generations here. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, and I'm joined, as always, by Destin LeGarry. Give it to me, Destin.
A launch day, bam, to everybody. 11:10. Perfect episode title for this episode. I am so happy that everybody is getting their next gen consoles today. I can't wait to hear about your experiences and your first impressions of getting it. I was super stoked when I got to play with Series X, and I'm just excited for everybody.
Well, good, we're going to talk a lot more. Yes, we're going to talk a lot more about that. Brendan Tyrell, good to see you, my friend.
Good morning. Hello.
Hello, hello. And Miranda Sanchez, hi.
Hey, everybody. I hope that you all are fun unboxing your boxes if you got one, and if you didn't, I hope you're able to get one soon if you want one. I don't know about you guys, but I keep like patting my Series X. Like I pat the top. It's just very satisfying to touch the top of it. It's just like it's good console. Thank you for your hard work.
Well, it's already been quite a ride for a lot of people, because I've seen a lot of tweets of people who actually got theirs shipped early to them, and they received it early, which I can't remember that ever happening with a major console launch. That would blow my mind if I had just pre-ordered and were expecting it on launch day, and actually it showed up earlier. So happy for those folks. Unfortunately, I've certainly seen plenty of people in my feed, and I'm sure you guys have seen it too. It's still it's tough going out there trying to get a Series X. Destin, I know you were saying eBay is a war zone,
yeah, if you want to pay double markup, I mean, yeah, you could go to eBay. I don't recommend that. People have probably been camping out for any of the retailers that were allowing pickup. You know, a lot of people are saying, I know Sony said you can't go in stores and get it, so they're offering pickup. I think Xbox is doing the same thing.
Yeah,
but it is not easy to get a console right now if you miss the pre-order window. Godspeed, that's all I'll say, I suppose.
Well, yeah, hopefully stock is gonna keep coming. That's the problem. We don't know. I mean, Phil Spencer tweeting out a picture yesterday of an Ark of the Covenant looking warehouse.
Oh, yeah, it really was. You asked him, Ryan, are we going to have inventory shortages? And he said no. So I wouldn't be surprised if he holds to that and we have another inventory push later, like a little later in November. I hope that's the case. I want people to play their consoles.
Now, Brendan Tyrell, arguably the biggest game for the Series X this week. Series X optimized, really a big new title showing off the new system. Assassin's Creed Valhalla is probably that game.
It's weird how that shook out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you reviewed it, and boy, you know, yes, we are very grateful to have our jobs, and we are lucky to get to do what we do. But you put in 60 hours in a week just on the game to get it turned around from the time you got the series, you know, the Xbox version of the game, started reviewing it, and then actually doing the review after the 60 hours, which is
the hard part.
So, yeah, I want to hear from you, and I know our audience does. You know, is this the game to pick up this week if you're picking up a Series X? How is Assassin's Creed Valhalla? The floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, I apologize for being brain dead, still catching up on sleep. But as far as like, you know, that first launch of games go, I think Valhalla really does make a good argument for, you know, that third party game that you pick up to play to kick the tires on your Series X or S. You know, I know it's an Assassin's Creed game. Like, it doesn't play all that differently from Odyssey or Origins, right? Like, anytime you get a new game, you really want to see something that makes use of the next gen stuff. And, you know, this game's been in development for a long time, but like, go watch the video review at IGN if you haven't seen it yet. That capture doesn't do it justice, but it does show off one of the things that is just fantastic, which is the world that they've created in Valhalla is so friggin' beautiful, especially at 4K. Unfortunately, you know, I played in 4K. We captured at 1080 just for logistical purposes this time. But when you're like hanging out on a hill, right, or one of the synchronization points on top of a tower somewhere, and it's in 4K and it's in 60, and you're looking out over the fields and the clouds are like rolling overhead and the shadows are slowly crawling across the landscape, and everything is smooth, everything is super crisp, draw distances for miles. Like, it had that cool moment that reminded me of like Breath of the Wild, where it's like or Skyrim, right, where you see that place off in the distance, you can go there. And I had that sort of twinge again when I would see things off in the distance and then ride there and then interact with it. It is a really, really, really beautiful game. And running, you know, 4K 60, like the 60 frames per second totally makes the experience for me, because it is so smooth and it is just sort of seamless as you're running around. And I mean, it's a Ubisoft open world game, so it's got bugs, right? Lots of bugs actually, and weird hitches and glitches that, you know, take you out of it. But
not that we should forgive that.
No, not at all. But I mean, they pale in this, what I said in my review as well, they pale in comparison to the overall experience, where some of them are bad. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. The thing hard crashed on me several times, but you know, as it happened, and maybe it's the power of the Xbox, I was back in the game in like 2 minutes. It wasn't that big of a deal to me, less than that, really. It wasn't that big of a deal to me in the scope of the entire experience. Right. They're bad when they happen, but overall, 60
like
hours.
Like Bethesda games, where, you know, there are bugs, but you have such a great time that.
Yeah, and kind of like Bethesda games, some of them were like kind of endearing, you know, where it's like everyone remembers Skyrim when the giant hits the mammoth and it goes flying into the air. Like that was a bug. It was bad, but it was funny, you know. And there are some of those in Assassin's Creed as well. There are some very annoying ones where, you know, you get stuck on stairs, you can't break stuff that you're supposed to be able to break, you know, quests that stop, and it's frustrating. But overall, like, the scope of the game, playing in 60 frames, running around, just riding through the wilderness, it's a really cool sort of next step up to fidelity that I think a lot of people who are just playing on a regular Xbox One will have probably never experienced. So it's a really good showcase of like what to expect from next generation. Like, yes, it doesn't put the thing to its paces. It doesn't do, you know, everything that we expect from next gen as far as where we're going to be in 3 or 4 years. But this is sort of like what I consider the baseline for experience moving forward is 4K 60. And when it works really well and it's fluid and it's crisp, like Valhalla is, it's really something special. It's awesome.
And you gave it an 8. You called it great. A great out of 10, says IGN.com's Brendan Tyrell.
It was great out of 10. Like I said, you know, I think it's pretty easy to focus on the trees at the risk of, you know, missing out on the forest, right? So taking everything into account, it's still a great game. It's got its problems, but I had a lot of fun with it. I wish I didn't have to play it in a week. I would have loved to... I would have loved to spend a little more time and do, you know, things a little bit more my style, which is exploration based. And then when I get bored or something, I want to go back and pick up the main story. But yeah, it's a good game. It's a fun game.
Excellent. Well, read your review on IGN.com also, or you can find on YouTube, the video version, 9-minute video review, which is an epic. Like we don't usually go that long.
Yeah.
Except for the biggest and the most anticipated
longer
game,
reviews. So. Yeah. 100%.
So I'm sorry, Ryan. I don't mean to keep cutting you off. I love longer reviews. I think that structure is fantastic. Like some of our previews even touch 10 minutes, which is again crazy on the long side, right? The problem is logistics. Is you know, we usually have a word count that we hit for review scripts, and that brings you in around 5-6 minutes.
Yeah.
But some games you got to talk at length in order to touch on everything. So while I do love reviews, you know, it's hard. It's a harder turnaround, especially for the team. Like I was writing and cutting this video review with Pat Coughlin, who's on our video side. We were doing that on like Sunday afternoon, and I think we wrapped everything up at like midnight or 12:30, like a few hours before the 3 a.m. embargo. So longer reviews are great. I'm glad it turned out this time, but you know, it's not something that's feasible every time.
Yeah, that's all your gameplay too, which is awesome. Oh,
Justin ruining the show with a ringing cell phone. But
is it your? Did you get something?
Is it your shipment?
I'm about to say. I actually have mine on.
It's FedEx telling me my Xbox is here,
Mr. Xbox.
Really?
I'm not even kidding. Yeah,
excellent. You're excused.
I think yeah. So if you guys hear phones going off, it's probably that, which is also what I'm waiting for because I have another Xbox come in for one of our coworkers. So.
Well, in any case, yeah, so glad to hear that Assassin's Creed Valhalla is great, and it's a worthy showcase for the Series X here on launch day. There's a lot more, though. I mean, you know, I've got NBA 2K21, the next-gen version, running behind me, and it is a separate next-gen version.
That's cool.
And you can see, like, you know, I know you can't tell from a camera within a camera, a screen within a screen, but, man, it looks good, so... You know, there's some good variety of stuff out there, even if we're lacking in those big first party killer exclusives for now. But happy Xbox Series launch day and launch week, everybody. And with that, let's get to some news. The big story, Destin, I have to go to you here. The man who has played more Mass Effect than anyone I know. Mass Effect Legendary Edition finally confirmed as a real thing after many leaks, rumors, reports. It was announced on 11/7, of course, and here it is. It's coming out in spring of 2021. It will include the single player based content, of course, and all the DLC from Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, and including all of the promo weapons, armors, packs, all the content basically coming back, remastered and optimized for 4K Ultra HD. Casey Hudson, who of course runs BioWare now and was the project lead on Mass Effect originally, said that the team at BioWare's goal, quote, was not to remake or reimagine the original games, but to modernize the experience so that fans and new players can experience the original work in its best possible form.
And Destin, what does that mean?
That's really funny to me.
I want to go. This is what I want to hear from you. Are the massive effect-spurt.
Effect?
Yeah.
We'll workshop this. There's something.
I don't know if I like that, but we'll go with it. Yeah. So I'm really, really stoked about this. I'm going to play through it again. The dream has always been for them to take a look back at least Mass Effect 1 and sort of modernize a lot of the systems, right? Because when they phrase it this way, the goal was not to remake or reimagine the original games, but to modernize the experience so that fans and new players can experience the original work in its best possible form. To me, that says they're not changing the core systems, which do need a little bit of work. We're probably going to get higher frame rate, higher fidelity, better lighting, you know, better textures. I think they're going to do that stuff. I would have loved it. Well, we don't know, right? So I can't even speak definitively, but I do not think they're going to be touching the core experience. And that's what I really would have loved to see them do. And I hope I'm eating crow and they actually did that. I can't wait to see what they've done here. I'm tremendously excited. Miranda, you got to be excited too.
Yes, I've been like dancing over here, but N7 Day is always a really exciting time. And having this announced on N7 Day is always super exciting. But to kind of echo your points, Dustin, I think if you guys haven't ever played Mass Effect, going back to the original game is kind of a pain. The way the game controls between Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 is rather different in the way it kind of formats its combat experience.
Yeah.
But the first one really feels old. Like, it's a little clunky. It's not the most fun to play. You can absolutely still go back and play it, but... I mean, you can still play it, but like, as you were saying, it needs to be modernized, right? Like, it just doesn't handle correctly. Like, it's a little, it's just clunky. It feels like you're carrying something that's like, you know, when you have a really heavy box and you're like, it's really hard to pick up, you can do it. You're going to get that box upstairs.
This just but did. Mass Effect, like a really heavy box, IGN. Yeah.
Looking back with sort of the hindsight of history, you can really see the sort of Mass Effect 1 was kind of the bridge between Knights of the Old Republic, which was Casey Hudson's project right before Mass Effect, to then Mass Effect 2 and 3. Like, KOTOR was a basically a turn-based, more or less a turn-based game, where you would queue up attacks and what you wanted to do. And then Mass Effect 1 kind of made it more real-time, and then really 2 and 3 turned it into a third-person shooter that had role-playing elements. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how one is handled. Now, Destin, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the PC, the original PC version of Mass Effect, released not long after the original Xbox version in fall of 2007? The PC version did tweak the inventory system, didn't it? So to make it the interface for that a little bit cleaner?
Yeah, the interface was quite different on PC because it had to accommodate for a keyboard and mouse. So a lot of the puzzles involved moving your mouse through the keyhole as opposed to doing it however you did it on Xbox. I can't even remember. So yeah, there were definitely changes on the PC version. And, you know, fans of the series for years have been adding improvements to the game, like improved lighting. And there's this huge texture pack you can download that the fans made that sort of enhanced the PC version of Mass Effect 1. And they've done a phenomenal job. Yeah, so the concern for me is always like, please don't just do that, you know, because that's been out in the community for years. I really want to see what BioWare, this renowned studio, can do with the game that they built, especially with Casey Hudson there. Like, Casey Hudson drew concept art of the Geth on a napkin, and that's what ended up becoming the Geth. I admire, like, that period in BioWare's history is just so interesting to look back at, and how they're in Edmonton, right? And they were into like this small not small studio space, but like an office space, and they were coming together as a content team and just creating this amazing experience for us. And like, they were really in their heyday then. I hope we get to revisit that and see how they would modernize that now that a lot of the core team is there.
Right, Brandon, got a comment.
Yeah, I would say like one of the challenges too is like, I don't want Mass Effect to lose its identity of how unique that gameplay is as a bridge between kind of almost pseudo turn-based RPG with shooter. Like, it really has that RPG, you know, element to it that is iconic to Mass Effect 1. And I want that to be there, just like cleaned up, you know? Like, I don't want it to feel like any other third-person shooter. It needs to still feel like Mass Effect, just a little bit easier to handle.
So the remaster isn't for Series X, but it will have, quote, forward compatibility, okay, and targeted enhancements on Series X and PlayStation 5. What does that mean? Because that sounds like Series X optimizations, but not. I don't understand.
Wait,
do they just mean, Ryan, it'll take advantage of the SSD?
Can you clarify this quote? It says the remaster isn't for Series X, but it will have forward compatibility enhancements for the Series X and PlayStation 5. Is there a typo?
No, look where the quote is. So this is clipped from the IGN story. So the quote part is forward compatibility and targeted enhancements on Series X.
Like, are we just talking about upscaling or maybe like...
Yeah, like, I'm just... Weird. There's a weird line being drawn there, and I'm just not sure where that line is.
I was like, is this a typo? Because that's such a bizarre statement to put out.
So it wasn't designed specifically for next gen, but it works on next gen and will have enhancements, but it wasn't intended to necessarily be there, but it will be there.
That's what it says to me is like, look... As you said at the top of the segment, Ryan, like this announcement has been the worst kept secret for a long time. Clearly, this has been in development, or they've been working on this for a while. It's probably targeted at current gen, but it will work on next gen. So I imagine that's probably where that line comes from. Like, it is not intended to be a next-gen remaster package. It just, you know, has the good fortune of working.
Yeah, I guess the SSD will really cut down those elevator rides in Mass Effect 1, right?
There goes my snack break.
So there's more here.
It's a feature.
There is more to this. Casey Hudson also confirmed that, quote, a veteran team has been hard at work envisioning the next chapter of the Mass Effect universe, end quote. BioWare's only in the early stages of the project. They did share one sort of bit of concept art from that. Miranda, what do you make of the future of BioWare here? And they're seemingly now, I guess, walking away from Anthem. Is that what this is saying?
I don't know. They're still kind of tweaking. Like, I feel like they're still picking at Anthem. Like, it exists and things happen with it. They give periodic updates, but it's very interesting to me to hear what they want to do going forward with Mass Effect. So how I interpreted this is that maybe they're thinking about developing a bigger Mass Effect. I could see them doing it after the next Dragon Age. Like, say they have that team, they push that out, and then they shift to that, and they still have a team on Anthem. I could see that being the case, and they just kind of still try to make that work and not give up on it. I'm Joker. Not too sure what they want to do with that, but I think given how much time that they have put to it, I would like to see them really go forward with Anthem and make it better.
Destin, I think the use of the word veteran team there was very deliberate, wasn't it?
I mean, yeah, for sure. They're trying to sort of say, hey, we got the same people on it that made like the beloved franchise. We're taking this seriously. We're working on it. They're trying to just say, I think they know Andromeda was not received positively. Miranda, do you still have the same fondness for Andromeda looking back at it today?
I did. I always feel weird saying it because I did enjoy my time in Andromeda. Obviously, it's not the original trilogy. Acknowledge that. They never brought my Quarians over. I'm still mad that they got left in a book instead of full DLC. But I did enjoy my time with it. I can see like spots of what we loved about the original trilogy in Andromeda. It just didn't make it all the way through. And I think even playing that game, and we went and gotten to go preview it, you could see where things shifted in development. Like, that game became pretty different at a certain point. And you could see that. And you can see that that's a problem, right, with the development cycle. So I'm just hoping, personally, like, it's cool that you have a veteran team on this. But what I'm more concerned about is that you're giving the project time to have the quality that it needs to be, you know, made correctly. And I think that's kind of maybe an issue that happened with Andromeda. And so I don't think you necessarily need to have like the same old crew on a game to make it good, right? Like, I think there's a lot of innovation that can be made with a new team.
Look at Doom.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think there's so many different things. Even at like Nintendo, they're pretty big on making sure that they're passing the torch and finding the right people to lead things. But it's really hard to find that and to make sure that you're keeping those dreams alive in a very authentic way. Still no contact. So I just hope they give this the time it needs to be developed, I guess.
Here's how I imagine this all unfolding. Casey Hudson, he's overworking on HoloLens. He sees Andromeda come out. He sees all the feedback. He hits this magic button on his wall. A suit of N7 armor opens up. He adorns it, and he heads back to Edmonton, and he's like, no, let's do this right. We're getting the team back together. And
well, that's okay.
That's the first thing he did. Like, he was like, yeah, Anthem, whatever. All this stuff is going to happen. Mass Effect. That's our focus for the next few years.
I mean, yeah, it does seem like
Dragon Age,
right?
Dragon Age, yeah. I'm so excited.
The Dragon Age team has been hard at work for a long time, and they seemingly are still have quite a ways to go. We got teased at EA's E3, and I'm using air quotes if you're listening on the podcast, press conference. So they're still going along. And then, yeah, you've got the Anthem team. This seems to me that, I mean, because they tried to fix Anthem. And Destin, you would know better than I would, but it seems like there has not been a response from it doesn't seem like that it's had a, you know, Final Fantasy 14 or No Man's Sky like rebirth. No,
that, That's in progress.
Okay.
Yeah, the Anthem team in Austin has been actually talking about it. They have a dedicated team to working on Anthem. I am not holding on to hope that Anthem is going to have this massive resurgence and suddenly be this amazing game. I don't think it has the core systems necessary to do that. I think what they do is they do the best they possibly can with Anthem, get it to a state where they're mostly happy with some of the systems, and then they do Anthem 2. They need to like just chalk Anthem 1 up to an experiment, redo it for Anthem 2 and do it properly. Yeah. And launch it. The name just has too much negativity associated with it.
I totally agree, but I don't think you're right about it. Doesn't I think it does have the core systems. I think it has everything it needs. It's just it doesn't come together in a way that's fun.
They make two different games.
Yeah.
Flying through the air is fun, but you could tell they tried to make Iron Man the game based on Destiny, and it just didn't work out, right? So Anthem V2, whatever that's going to be, and this process has been going on for a long time. Even like two years ago, we were like, hey, are we going to hear about what's new for Anthem? And it just keeps getting delayed and delayed. So I have faith that they can turn it into something, but I also agree with you that I think it's too late, right?
Maybe
if that is a service game, like that window's gone. Like people aren't really going to come back for that.
And I agree with you on that point, especially. I think the games as service experiment has largely failed. We've seen Avengers lose a ton of money, or at least that's the rumor that's been going around. Anthem was a massive bomb. What if they redid Anthem and it's not a game as a service and they're able to focus on their storytelling, refine that story, tell a better story, give the player a better overall experience, and have subtle aspects of cooperative gameplay in the way that, say, Borderlands 3 does it, right? It doesn't have, not everything has to be games of service. And I wonder when companies are going to start to say, you know, maybe the single player thing isn't such a bad idea after all.
You know, Destin, you actually answered a question in my head about when you said, so it's BioWare Austin that's now running Anthem, which means BioWare Edmonton, the other team that was the Anthem team, aside from the Dragon Age team, that's who's going to make Mass Effect. That's your veteran team. While Austin takes over Anthem, because of course Austin has experience in live service games. They did Star Wars: The Old Republic, so
pretty good game.
So whether this was always the plan to sort of have BioWare Edmonton hand off to Austin on this, or whether this is a new plan, this is the path forward for Mass Effect. So, I mean, we're probably still four to 5 years away from Mass Effect coming back properly. But this remaster is, because it is not a remake, it is clearly a remaster for better and for worse. It is the first step, hopefully, towards rehabilitating not just the franchise's image, but BioWare's image overall.
And saying that same team that worked on Anthem is working on the new Mass Effect, does that inspire confidence in people or
not in the general core
gaming
community?
That's why he said the veteran team has come back together. It's not hey, this is the same team that made the original Mass Effect. It's, hey, we're still BioWare. We still have all the people here that know how to make a great game. So don't worry about it. I know we've slipped up recently, but don't worry about it.
I like everybody at BioWare tremendously. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the work that they've done. They really need a huge win.
Yeah,
they do. Like if this remaster is just a retexture, that's just another like negative in the community's eyes. So they really need like Dragon Age better be phenomenal.
If it's another difficult project, then
yeah.
I will also say the last Anthem update, just for anyone who's curious, was on October 28th, 2020. So not too long ago.
Okay.
Jeez. And it looks totally different. They revamped like the inventory system and everything. They're doing a lot of work over there. They're not just not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we could do a whole deep dive on like what went wrong with Anthem and how, despite what they're doing. I think Destin, what you're saying is pretty correct on maybe just relaunching or doing something new will be what that game needs. But who knows?
Well, we've got so much to cover. Let's move on to the next story. Xbox is reportedly looking to purchase Japanese game development studios and has been in contact with both small and large game developers. According to a report from Bloomberg, quote, several Japan-based game developers of varying size have been approached by Microsoft to talk about acquiring their business.
The developers asked not to be identified at this time due to the private nature of the talks. Well, Destin, you're saying what's, I think, on everybody's mind. Oh. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just had something in my throat, Ryan. No,
was it
Sega.
Was it a hedgehog?
Yeah, it's a little bristly. No, the Sega rumor, it's going around not that long ago in your run of show notes here. And honestly, that makes total sense for Xbox, right? I think that would be a good get for Microsoft. I don't really have a ton of commentary to add besides that. That would be one. It would be, I don't know, who else would be on your mind as somebody who would be a good get for them? Well, like you're...
Any thoughts on who you'd like to see Xbox target in Japan?
I think Sega would be interesting with what they have as far as their properties. We talked about this a little bit before, but I mean, Sega owns a lot of different smaller, or like, it's weird to say smaller studios, but a lot of studios under their umbrella too. So that would bring a ton of games into the Xbox ecosystem exclusively. So-
right off the top of my head, I wonder what sort of investment they're looking for, having just spent however billion with a B,
$7.5 billion
on Bethesda. That is a large chunk of change. So I don't know what Daddy Microsoft's bank account looks like right now as far as acquisitions for the future go. It makes sense if you want to stay in a console sort of business, you need to figure out ways to make footholds into markets and regions that you just are not cracking into right now. So this makes a lot of sense. How much do they want to invest in it, though, is the question.
Well, the fact that they're saying large and small developers seems like they're open to any possible, you know, that their pockets are not empty yet. There are still cash in those pockets.
Yeah. So my dream makeup of what Microsoft buys, or acquires out of Japan is Kojima Productions. I think that is a very interesting and potentially incredibly lucrative
acquisition. Sony own the studio, would never or happen, did they just right? partner up?
Acquisition for them. What's that?
That would never happen, right?
No, Sony doesn't own them. Yeah, they're second party.
Okay, there was just a partnership. They're just publishing, right?
That would be wild.
As far as I know, they're second party, but can you imagine Kojima officially joining Microsoft? I don't think it'll ever happen because...
No, he's got a great relationship with Sony.
Relationship with Sony. What happened with Konami? I honestly don't think he wants to work for a boss like... You know, he has proven that he's got the name and, you know, his team obviously has the talent to create stuff on their own. Why would you need to be owned? So I don't think that'll happen, but can you imagine? Outside of that, I would love to see From Software on the docket for them. Another strange pickup, because From Software originally was second party back in, you know, Demon Souls. They only made it for Sony. But since then, they've, you know, obviously Dark Souls has been on everything.
Well, you're forgetting their Xbox history with Atobi.
They have a long history. At what point do you look at a studio and say it's the same studio as the past, right? Like there was a certain turning point with Dark Souls for them. And that sort of became their sort of lucrative path forward. But, you know, Bloodborne, you'd be insane to think there's not a sequel in the works, right? I've been saying this for 5 years, 4 years. So again, that one's a little thin, but maybe. And then I pulled up a few other ones that I think are interesting. I think Level 5, which
I was going to bring up.
Yeah, I think Level 5, which is Ni No Kuni, kind of fits right up there with Microsoft. They have a history of purchasing or working with Japanese developers to create JRPGs. And Ni No Kuni just sort of fits Microsoft's bill, right? Look at Ori and some of these other games. Sea of Thieves, very family friendly.
And they were developing True Fantasy Live Online as an original Xbox exclusive. And
they were. That was canceled.
it's a make good 20 years later.
So they also work on Yo-Kai Watch, which I think would be an interesting thing to have in the Xbox ecosystem, because it's like a Pokemon game essentially, but just a different version with Yo-Kai. And I wonder if it would still work with like Nintendo on that though, because that's a very like Nintendo game, especially in Japan. I don't think it's as big here, but it's definitely something bigger in Japan.
And I thought about that exact same thing, because it is a competitor of Pokemon, right? So not a competitor is probably a strong word, but at what point, like, do they retain the license? Are they still able to work on that license if they get acquired? I'm not sure about that. The other one that I thought would be a good get for them is Arc System Works, who's got a really phenomenal history of fighting games. They, you know, just recently did Dragon Ball FighterZ. They do the Guilty Gear stuff. They just if they haven't released Strive, no, it's coming out next year, I think.
They did Kill a Kill game.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, that's sort of their fighting game area covered for them. And then the last one is kind of a weird one, but Grasshopper Manufacture, I think, would be an interesting an interesting one. You know, Sony's got their Kojima. Xbox gets their Suda 51, right? He makes very strange games, very weird games. But they've always been niche. They, I don't think any of them have really exploded, unlike, you know, No More Heroes has. I think what I'm trying to say is I think that's probably their highest profile one. But I could see him, you know, with a blank check from Microsoft, their studio doing some really, really interesting things. And, you know, his games have been on the Xbox in the past. I don't know if you remember the bullet hell game Cine Mora on Xbox Live Arcade. That came from Grasshopper Manufacturer. There was a game called Black Knight Sword that I think I actually reviewed 5 years ago or something like that. It was very interesting as well. So, you know, I think there could be something there. If Microsoft is very interested in picking up not just a studio, but a personality.
So
Miranda,
I have, this is going to ruffle some feathers and maybe stir up some bad feelings with some people. Platinum Games. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that too. Go ahead.
I like it.
Yeah, I think that would just make a lot of sense. I think they make those sort of like action JRPGs just a super, I keep saying super, a wonderful wide variety of games that I think would fit really well in the Xbox ecosystem. Obviously, they have Bayonetta. They did Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, Wonderful 101. I remember they did the Legend of Korra game. I actually covered that forever ago. Obviously, Nier is huge, and I think that actually fits really well in the Xbox ecosystem. So I think that would be an interesting pickup. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Ryan. You've just got a cheerleader dance squad going on behind you right now.
I see a coach in a plaid suit.
It must be halftime. Just missed them.
But yeah, no, Miranda, I'm with you on that. Was one of the two. I wrote down a small developer and a big one. I'm with you on Platinum because yeah, it's like yes, there was Scalebound. No, I don't think Scalebound would come back even if Microsoft bought them. But yeah, there is a history there. There is a partnership, and they make the thing about Platinum is they make critically acclaimed games, just typically fantastic games that, with all due respect, generally have not sold very well. And there could be a great mutual fit there of Xbox saying, hey, you guys make great stuff. We'd love to help you bring it to a bigger audience through Game Pass and the first party family. And Platinum could say, hey, we'd love to have our games be put out to more people and to have the power of the marketing arm of first party and to have that financial security for the studio too. So I agree that could be a big fit. And then just to throw the pie in the sky one, if the rumor is big and small developers, Capcom. I mean, look at the treasure trove of IP.
That's really good.
That Capcom has Resident Evil, Street Fighter, Monster Hunter, Devil May Cry, the currently dormant Mega Man, Dead Rising, the list goes on. I mean, that's
really, really, really good thought, Ryan.
I don't know what the price would be. I don't know, but you know, if you paid $7.5 billion for Bethesda and you're still shopping, Capcom, and you want something, you know, you want that variety, you want the Japanese game development. Boy, Capcom, you couldn't really. They might be the Bethesda of Japan as far as the quality and quantity of their portfolio. So
I think that's a really smart observation, because if you're looking to buy into Japan, you're also looking to have crossover interest with your Western markets, right? Capcom definitely has that. Yeah. Look, what other publisher has so many game series that are popular on both sides of the Pacific? You know, Resident Evil is big in both. Monster Hunter is big in both. That's really smart, man. That's really, really smart. I like that a lot. I'm going to say $5 billion.
I mean, who knows? I don't know what it would actually take to get that, but you know, it's not out of the question.
Hey, Ryan, small thing. Can I just interject? It's just a super nerdy thing. Phil Spencer just confirmed that Destiny 2 multiplayer is going to run at 120 FPS.
Woo! Nice.
So that's kind of insane for the Series X to be sporting. Pretty
that
cool stuff.
That is fantastic.
If you're just listening to the podcast audio version of it, Destin has removed his shirt and is running circles in his living room.
All right, let's move on to the loot box. Colby is our unlocked listener who we are going to hear from via Yappa. By the way, just a quick before we play this, we want to hear from you and see you via Yappa. We have a video comment system on IGN now. The best way to do it, to get your loot box question featured as a Yappa video comment on the show, just Google, when you hear this and you got a cool question for the panel, just Google IGN Unlocked 469 to find this episode's show page. And then you'll just find the Yappa section right down near the bottom, right above the comments. And you don't have to make a Yappa account if you don't want to. You can sign in with Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Discuss. So just leave us an awesome video comment as Colby did. Go ahead, Colby.
Hi, Ryan and the Unlock crew. I'm sitting here today at work listening to, I guess, last week's podcast. Don't tell my boss. And your conversation around Cyberpunk brought up a question in my head. With originally the next gen version of Cyberpunk releasing later, with the delay, what do you think the possibility is of both the next gen version of Cyberpunk and I guess what is still the current gen version of Cyberpunk releasing side by side? Or do you think the next gen version will be pushed back even further? Let me know your thoughts.
Brandon, you want to take this one? Give him the bad news.
Unfortunately, I mean, it's a fair question, right?
Yeah, it is. We've gotten this question a lot, which is why I wanted to play it, because Colby is far from the only person who's been wondering this.
Yeah, I mean, it's already been established the next gen version isn't going to be out for a while. I mean, you're looking into, I'd say, a tail end of Q1 2021 is when you start looking for it, and we'll see what happens. But realistically, it's not going to be until well into next year.
Yeah, they would have announced it. They would have said, hey, we're delaying the game, but the next gen version is going to be there on day one. They would have absolutely let everybody know if that was going to be the case. So thank you, Colby. And again, if you've got a loot box question for us, hit us with it via Yappa on IGN.com. All right. Unlock Block Trivia time. Joe writes in and says, I finally played Alan Wake this week. I know Miranda did recently, too, after years of being badgered by us, the podcast Unlocked, to play it. You were all right, and Alana was wrong. Love you, Alana, but thank you, Joe. He says, it's great. I did notice a lot of product placement, which was weird to see in 2020, as it's not been normalized like we once thought outside of sports games. So my question is this. We all know Energizer is used throughout the game. It powers your flashlight, the batteries. Yeah. There are many other product placements as well. Which one of these does not have a product placement or advertisement in Alan Wake? Now, I'm going to go to Miranda last because I expect she's going to get this right, having just played the game. But Destin, I'll go to you first. So Xbox 360, Verizon Wireless, Folgers Coffee, or the Ford Sync, which is a Sync technology. So one of three of those are in the game, are in Alan Wake. One of them isn't. Do you happen to know which one is the fake?
I was going to say the Ford Sync.
Okay.
D.
Brandon, any thoughts here?
I have no idea. I genuinely don't, because I don't remember that game. Yeah. Like, I played it so long ago. I've seen Xbox 360 ads in games before, like back in that era. So I believe that was one. I imagine Verizon Wireless is in there. It's between Folgers and Ford for me. I don't know if Ford Sync is an actual car, but it's got to be, right? It's got to be. I'm going to go D, Ford Sync.
Okay. So, and Destin, you said Ford as well, right?
Can I change my answer?
No!
I'm just kidding.
No, we're in this together.
All right. So you're both Ford. Miranda, do you remember this fresh off the game?
So that's one of the hard parts. I was streaming this game, so it's not like I'm paying attention to every single thing, though I was hunting those thermoses. Like, those thermoses, like, laser-focused on them.
Thermoses?
I'm not going to tell you the other ones that I know were in there. There are some things I definitely saw. Obviously, Energizer is the most prominent of them. I actually don't know what Ford Sync is. That does not sound like a car to
me. It's not a car. Okay, so it's like tech. It's multimedia. It's like entertainment software that goes in the cars.
Okay.
So it is, but it is a thing that they have pushed. I will just tell you, Ford Sync is a real thing. It's not okay. Joe's not trolling you with that.
Yeah. So I feel bad that I don't actually remember what this is, although I did really enjoy Alan Wake.
I'm dying to know what it is.
I know, right? Like,
this is a good one.
Ford Sync is so specific.
It really is, which makes me like suspicious.
There's no way that's the right answer.
I don't know if I remember seeing Verizon in it.
Well, look, we know he wears a lot of flannel, and anyone that wears flannel drinks Folgers coffee. We know this. We all grew up on these commercials.
Some of these. I'm going to go just to be different.
Just to be different. What, Miranda, what are you doing?
I'm doing B, Verizon Wireless.
Verizon, okay.
I don't remember. I think I could be wrong.
Joe has clowned you all. It was Folgers. There's not Folgers in Alan Wake. Although, yeah, see, and what I love about this, I have to tip my cap to Joe, because Folgers was the perfect red herring to throw in this, because it would make sense if it was in there. Yeah. Like, it wasn't Rudy an obvious.
Yeah. So, that's 100% my thought process. I was like, flannel, cabin, obviously Folgers is
in there. Like, I thought I saw, because there's a lot of coffee makers you pass. So, as I was just saying, the main collectible you find are thermoses. Like, they're just freaking everywhere. It's great. I love them. And collectibles. Anyway, but I remember passing like coffee stations in different buildings, and I thought I saw Folgers, but maybe it was just a generic like red can sort of thing rather than Folgers brand. So
yeah,
that's good though.
Well, Joe, well done. You've stumped everybody. So if anybody else out there, keep those awesome trivia questions coming. You can send them via email, and that email address is unlocked@ign.com. And that will pretty well bring us back to the end of another show. The big one, the system is out. If you've got it, enjoy it. If you haven't been able to get your hands on it, I hope you're able to get your hands on one soon. As for me, you can find me on Twitter @DMC_Ryan. A reminder, I reviewed both the Xbox Series X and the Series S as consoles, as hardware units. So if you haven't checked those out, and you maybe, you know, it's something to watch while you're setting up your consoles, just because it will take a little while to set the thing up. So check those out. Also, IGN Unfiltered is back this month. I put out that episode a week or two ago. It is with Raven Software co-founder Brian Raffel. They are the studio behind the campaign for this year's Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. Check that out. And I think that's it for me. Yeah, that's fine. Brandon Tyrell.
Hey, hi, I'm Brandon. You can find me on Twitter @BrandonTyrell. this week, I reviewed Assassin's Creed. Almost said Odyssey, but it's Valhalla. You can find that review on IGN right now. It's very long, but if you have questions, I probably answered them because I wrote over 4,000 words, which I shouldn't
have done. That's a lot.
But I did, or watch the video review. There's more information in the written review, obviously. But yeah, that's up, and I hope you've all been enjoying the next gen coverage on IGN. It's been a huge, huge effort from everyone involved, and we've got a lot more coming up this week and next week. So stay tuned. We're really making a go of it.
Destin, you've been putting together some awesome next gen video sort of comparison features.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thank you, too. I did one for Gears 5. That was my first one around when the embargo was up for the Series X. And I just today released one for Spider-Man Miles Morales on the PlayStation 5. These are super deep dives where, like, I slow down the game if it's running at 60 versus 30, or like Gears runs at 120 in multiplayer, to sort of show what you're actually getting at that higher frame rate. I do deep dive on ray tracing for Spider-Man Miles Morales. I'm super proud of these pieces. You can check those out on IGN.com right now. And then if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's @DestinLegarry. And tonight is Destiny 2 Beyond Light night. I'm going to be streaming that on my personal channel just because, you know, I love Destiny. So, I'm going to be playing a whole bunch of Destiny, and that's that's my reward for all the hard work I put into those comparisons. So, yeah.
I heard Destiny also runs at 120.
We just found out that it runs at 120 in Crucible. That's incredible for a console to be touting. That's really, really cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Miranda, take us home, please. You also have been putting a lot of hard work into helping people get the most out of their next-gen console launches.
Yes, if I seem a little frazzled, it's because I've been working super hard on getting together an Xbox Series X guide for all of you. So this is the things you want to do first, not necessarily playing games, but a lot of the back-end stuff in the systems that you want to set up, how to set parental controls. We also have some guides on audio options and a bunch of other things. So please check out our guide if you do need help. And if you're not saying something that you need, maybe hit me up on Twitter, which you can find me at Half a Gross, and that's Havoc with a K. So please definitely check that out. We'll have tons of guides going up. We have one for Yakuza. We have one for Gears Tactics if you're just jumping into that. IGN guides will be around always for you. We're trying our best to make sure we got everything covered. So please, please, please use our guides. We work incredibly hard on those. Also for me tonight, I'll be streaming a Remedy game. Also, I'm playing Control. So another fun game of collectibles.
Good stuff. All right. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy your next-gen console launch week. And we will see you back here for episode 470 next week.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.